Hello. Ah, there we are. We have sound. That's good. I have quite a soft voice, so it gets even softer when I meditate. So, so welcome to Dhammaloka this Saturday afternoon to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. Very nice that we have the opportunity to meditate together. I always find that even though I live in Sri Lanka and I live on my own in a hut, I always enjoy group meditations, and I find there's quite an energy with it. Do people find group meditation supportive? Yeah, I think probably that's why you're here. So it's very good to have that opportunity to have a group meditation. My name is Ajahn Nisarano, and as I mentioned, I'm living in Sri Lanka most of the time now, but I was ordained in the Serpentine Monastery, Bodhinyana, my full ordination 18 years ago. So it's very nice for me to come back to Dhammaloka, to here, to see people and to meditate with people. So it's a very good opportunity. So this afternoon, I was just going to introduce the meditation with a theme that I used recently, actually, but it's quite an important theme and useful in the meditation, and that is to think of the mind as a jewel. And I mentioned recently, Ayakema, one of my teachers, she used to refer to the mind as the jewel of a mind. And this is because, you know, the mind is actually, it's a great source of happiness, it's a great source of purity, of wisdom. It's where enlightenment happens. So the mind is a jewel. But for most of us, is that our experience? Do people feel that? Of course, the mind is also a great source of suffering. And this is what the Buddha was talking about. This is where most of our suffering comes from, doesn't it? Of course, we have suffering in the body as well. So in the meditation, I was going to develop this theme, this guided meditation. I developed the theme of the mind as a jewel. And to use that clarity of that jewel of a mind, the light of that mind, the brilliance of that mind, as a positive way to influence the meditation. Because there are many supports we can use for the meditation, and imagination is very useful in this area. For instance, we can think about things we are grateful for, people we are grateful for, and use the energy of that to develop loving kindness. And we can use that either with as a meditation on its own, or we can use it with the meditation object. We infuse it with this positive energy, and then that the meditation can go much, much deeper, because the mind is very attracted by it, because it's much more the breath. If you say, for instance, you're using the breath in the meditation, if it's got a very attractive feeling with it, the mind will stick to it, the mind will go deeper into it, and the meditation will progress very smoothly and deeply. So I would like to read something the Buddha said about, but why is this jewel of a mind? Why don't we see it as a jewel of a mind? Any ideas? Why is our mind sometimes our worst enemy? Defilements, that's it, that's in a nutshell. So we have this jewel of a mind, but what's it covered with? It's encrusted with, it's coated with this sort of mud, this of defilements. And these are the defilements, you know, for instance, we talk of greed, hatred and delusion. They're the ones we commonly talk of. But also in meditation, what we think of the defilements in terms of the five hindrances, pancha-nivarana. So this is like sensual desire and ill will, drowsiness and dullness, restlessness, and remorse or worry and doubt. These are qualities, these are hindrances, these are defilements that cover up the mind. And so it's when we develop the meditation that we clean the mind. We actually get to uncover that jewel. So I'd like to just read what the Buddha talked about with the mind. I think some of you will know this actually. He said, "Luminous, monks, is this mind, but it is defiled by adventitious defilements." And this means adventitious. It's not a common word, but it means the defilements that visit the mind. So in other words, they're external, from outside. That's what you'd say. So it reads, luminous because is this mind, but it is defiled by defilements that come from outside, visited by defilements that come from outside. The uninstructed worldling does not understand this as it really is. Therefore I say, for the uninstructed worldling, there is no development of the mind. This is citta bhavana. So this is like meditation, developing the mind, and other aspects of developing the mind. So this is for anyone who hasn't heard about meditation, hasn't heard about, say, for instance, Buddha's teachings. They would, he would say that they, to uncover the qualities of the mind will be very difficult. It's interesting when you say that. I don't know if that occurs to other people. It occurs to me that in other traditions they do develop deep meditation. And then the next one. Luminous, monks, is this mind, and it is freed from the defilements, the defilements that visit from outside. The instructed noble disciple understands this as it really is. Therefore I say that for the instructed noble disciple there is development of the mind. So the important message of that for me is the mind. The essential quality of the mind is luminous, is light. Like for me, that is a purity, a clarity to the mind. And this is something that we can uncover. This is something we can find by cleaning the mind with meditation, by removing the hindrances, even if temporarily, removing the defilements, even if temporarily. So this is something that that is useful in meditation. And when we do the guided meditation, I will use this theme. But I was just going to also mention to you, read what the Buddha said about development of the mind, because that is actually, what does one mean by development of the mind? He's saying about development, there is development of the mind for one who knows this, that the mind is luminous. And he says, two things, O monks, partake of true knowledge. What to? Serenity and insight. When serenity is developed, this is, you know, the tranquil meditation, what benefit does one experience? The mind is developed. So this is where the mind is developed. When the mind is developed, what benefit does one experience? All lust is abandoned. And this term lust, actually, in English, of course, we don't use that word very much, but it's those qualities in the mind of that is trying to get and gain. These are the qualities of the mind that we experience every day. And last night I was giving a talk and I was talking about getting and gaining. And it's that quality of the mind that thinks by getting something, by getting things, by getting people, by getting experiences, you know, we are going to find happiness. And this is what drives actually the world that we know. So this is a very the essence of, we say, samsara. And then he says, when insight is developed, what benefit does one experience? Wisdom is developed. When wisdom is developed, what benefit does one experience? All ignorance is abandoned. And then the Buddha says, so these are the two ways of developing the mind that the Buddha is talking about in this case. So serenity, abandoning lust, or that greed in the mind, and wisdom, abandoning ignorance. And then he says, a mind defiled by lust is not liberated, and wisdom defiled by ignorance is not developed. Thus, monks, through the fading away of lust, there is liberation of mind. Through the fading away of ignorance, there is a liberation by wisdom. So we need both of those. Liberation of the mind, fading away of lust, this is the end of all the defilements. And the liberation by wisdom is uprooting all those defilements permanently and ending the continuous cycle of birth and rebirth. So that, I thought, is quite useful for the meditation this afternoon. So it's pointing to the fact of how we can develop the mind. And what we're doing this afternoon is part of that developing of the mind, part of that cleaning of the mind, so that we can actually see the luminous quality of the mind. And when we have that luminous quality of the mind, develop the wisdom, the understanding, and also remove all the defilements and develop the wisdom to end samsara. So this is, I hope will be useful for the meditation, and as I say, I'll develop it as we go along. The other thing that I was going to emphasize this afternoon is, I found very useful, is for every meditation, it's very useful to have an intention when you start the meditation. You might have heard, I don't know, do you hear that very often from teachers? No? It's very useful to have an intention. And an intention is different from expectation or demanding that this happen, something happen in the meditation, a particular state occur. Because intention is much more like giving the mind a direction that it can go towards. Because I notice when I don't have an intention in mind, the meditation can go all over the place, you know. And that's fine, you know. But it's, if I have an intention in mind, it gives it, the mind, so much more strength that it can progress, the meditation can progress much easier, and it's got more purpose in it. We all need purpose, we all need a meaning, we all need to know why we're meditating. An intention gives that information to the mind, why it's meditating, what's the purpose. And when we have these intentions, it's very important not to, you know, we think, oh, you know, I want to be in first jhana or something like that. I want to be in a very deep meditation, or I want to develop insight. And this is not a very good intention. This is more like an expectation. But if we have intentions, just like, I'd like, may the mind be present. It's always good to word it in this way, I find. Instead of saying, I'll be present, or I'll be mindful, or I'll be aware of the body. Just to say, may my mind be present, may my mind be aware of the body, may my mind know what's happening clearly, you know, may my mind be alert during this meditation. These sorts of intentions are useful because they are creating the causes, the conditions for things to happen. They're not saying, I want to, you know, be in jhana, I want to be, you know, having different insight knowledges. So these are very useful because they set the base, they create the cause for things to happen, and they are achievable by the mind. It's also very useful with these intentions to have a sense of curiosity as well. You know, what is happening? What am I experiencing? Because one of the big difficulties for meditators, of course, you often hear this, so you've got to develop interest in the meditation. How do you develop interest? You know, you can't just say, I'm going to be interested. But if you have this curiosity, if you develop curiosity about what you're experiencing, that can give the interest, actually. Because, you know, the experiences, often we overlook very ordinary experiences, and these are in fact the basis for insight. These in fact may be much more important than we think at the time when we're meditating. So it's always very good to have this sense of curiosity. And at the end of the meditation, when the meditation is finished, we can reflect and look back on our experience and just notice if there was anything unusual or something stood out. And that is a very good way to keep the mind interested, to have the mind interested in the meditation, not wandering off. Because if we meditate regularly, we can get into just meditating and not really having much focus and not being clear in our intention. So intention's always very useful. So I think, having talked about it a little, I think now we can have a meditation for about 45 minutes. And I think I'm supposed to have said, actually, that if there are any people here who are meditating for the first time, you're next door is an introduction to meditation class. No, that's good. All right, so if we can find a posture that is comfortable for the meditation, and yes, actually, that would be, yeah, that's good. That's good. So we can close the eyes and adjust the body, adjust the clothing to make ourselves comfortable. And we can come into the present moment, just experiencing whatever is happening in the present moment, sounds, feelings of the body, temperature, movement of the air, whatever we're aware of. And we have this kindfulness, this attitude of kindness to whatever we're experiencing, be it pleasant or unpleasant. And now we ground ourselves in the body, which is very much in the present moment, starting at the top of the head and the back of the head, the side of the head, being aware of whatever we're experiencing in terms of feeling sensations. And moving down the forehead to around the eyes, noticing whatever we are aware of. And moving to the cheeks, the nose, around the mouth, the lips, and the chin, and even inside the mouth, just aware of whatever sensations there are. And moving down to the neck, all around the neck. And we relax the top, all the way from the top of the head, down the face, to the neck, with this kindfulness, relaxation, soothing. And we move the attention, the awareness, down to the shoulder, right shoulder, and move it down the arm, the upper arm, all around, being aware of what there is to experience. Around the elbow, the lower arm, the wrist, the top of the hand, and the palm of the hand. And we move the attention from to the base of the fingers, and then move them up the fingers to the tips of the fingers, and make a mind movement into the room, letting go of any tension, be it of the body or of the mind. Just relaxing the right shoulder, the right arm, the right hand. Now we move the attention to the left shoulder and become aware of it, how it is, and move the attention down the left arm to the elbow, all around the elbow, and down the lower left arm to the wrist, becoming aware of the palm of the hand and the top of the hand, all the feeling sensations, be they itching, warmth, pressure, coolness, whatever. And then we move the attention to the base of the fingers, and move up the fingers to the tips of the left hand, and then make a mind movement into the room, letting go of all tension of the body, and of the mind. And now we relax the back, starting below the shoulders, moving down the whole of the back, becoming aware of area after area, whatever feelings, sensations there might be, down to the waist, down past the buttocks to the top of the legs. And we relax the whole of the back. We have this attitude of kindfulness to the back, allowing it to relax, to be comfortable. And we bring the attention to the front of the body, to below the shoulders, and we move the attention down the chest, down towards the waist, the stomach, the waist, and the abdomen, noticing any areas, any sensations in any of the areas, down to the top of the legs, and we soothe, we massage with our minds that area from the top of, from the shoulders down to the top of the legs and the front of the body, relaxing, releasing, soothing. And now we move the attention down the right leg, round, down the right thigh, all around that thigh, to the knee, all around the knee, the lower leg, down to the ankle, all around the ankle, becoming aware of the heel of the left foot, the right foot, the top of the right foot, and the sole of the right foot. Just aware of whatever there is there. And we move the attention from the tips of the toes of the right foot, from the base of the toes to the tips of the toes. And we make a mind movement into the room, letting go of any tension, any hardness of body or mind, relaxing the right leg. Now we bring the attention to the left leg, to the top of the left leg, and move the awareness down the thigh, all around the thigh of the left leg, to the knee, all around the knee, experiencing whatever there is there, noticing, paying attention, recognizing, and moving down the lower left leg to the ankle, and then becoming aware of the heel and the sole of the left foot, and the top of the left foot, and moving the attention to the base of the toes of the left foot, and slowly moving up to the tips of the toes, and then out into the room, letting go of any tension, any hardness, tiredness of body or mind. And we become aware of the whole body and just sitting. And we just sit with the body as it is. And we can bring to mind a beautiful jewel, lots of facets, shining, bright, brilliant, and very pure, filling the mind with this incredible light, this brightness, this clarity, clearness. Dissolving the darkness, of anxiety, fear, ill will, negativity, filling the whole mind with light. With purity and joy. And we can bring this brilliant, clear light into the body from the top of the head all the way through down to the tips of the toes, filling the body, relaxing the body, healing the body wherever there are pains, difficulties. This brilliant white light, diamond light. And we can become aware of the breath, allow the breath to come to us, actually. And we can infuse the breath with this brilliant diamond-like light, this pure, clear, that brings joy, peace, breathing in this light. And breathing out the light. Sparkling, brilliant. whenever the mind wanders on, that brilliant light, that diamond-like light, shining, sparkling in the breath as we breathe in and as we breathe out. coming close to the end of the meditation, so we can just reflect for a short time on how we feel. And what we learned from the meditation, what stood out, what did we notice during the meditation? And we can share the energy that we have produced through this meditation with our family and friends, wherever they are, and with all beings, that they may experience clarity, light, joy, and happiness. And now we can slowly come out of the meditation and open the eyes and relax the body. Oh, really? Right. So, first of all, if there are any comments or questions here in Australia, and then I'll go to the ones from around the world. Oh, yes, yes. Yes. Right. Yes. This is actually comes up in the Anapanasati Sutta, the sutta the Buddha taught on the meditation on the breath. And this is the third stage of the meditation where the Buddha is talking about we become aware of the whole body. And usually the interpretation is the whole body of the breath. But there is another interpretation that we become aware of the whole body. And I like the answer that a monk in Sri Lanka that I know, Venmonyanadipa, he gave. And, you know, he was asked that, you know, do we pay attention just to the whole of the breath, you know, from the beginning, middle, the end, or do we pay attention to the whole body, move the attention, say, away from the breath to the whole body? And he said, either way, it amounts to pretty much the same. And it does, when you move the attention to the whole body, you're still aware of the breath. I find when I do that, it does give it a slightly more panoramic feel. But I feel with either approach is actually quite useful. And the determining factor as to what is right for you is whether it works. So for instance, if you move from the breath to the whole body and you find that the peace develops more, the awareness becomes sharper, brighter, that's working for you. If you stay with the whole breath, beginning, middle and end, and the mind is becoming sharper, clearer, calmer, more peaceful, it's working. So that's what I would say. Either is valid. Yes, what would you like to say? Yes. Yep.
Although it can be hard for some might feel that it can result in the leaving of the body of sensation experience and therefore creating pain.
Oh, right, right.
So
the,
in relationship to the breath, and dealing with the code of the breath in relationship to awareness of the code of the body, some might feel that is a way of dealing with that hindrance. The hindrance of getting lost, leaving the body at the second jhana, whenever, to go into the absorption states by being aware of the breath, to bear attention, and then losing the sensation of bear attention and going into jhana. Could you comment on that, please?
Right. I think I understand what you're saying. So you saying that if you are aware of the whole body, that's more like it will perhaps ground you in the body more, so that it's the absorptions, these jhanas, as they call them, may be more difficult to attain. From my experience of you know, experimenting with the whole breath of the body, the whole body of the breath, or the whole body, the sensations, or the whole feelings in the whole of the body, I don't think they ground me so much in the body. You know, I don't think it holds on to the perception of the body so much for me anyway. So I don't think that either approach would be an impediment for going into absorptions and so on, for very deep states of meditation. As I said before, what we do with the Buddha's teaching, we apply it. We see what we experience from applying that advice. So if we find, for instance, that by staying with the whole of the breath rather than going to the body, we find that, then the mind is getting more peaceful, then that's the way we should go, we should use. But if we find by going to the awareness, opening the awareness from the breath to the whole body, that we get calmer, stiller, deeper, more peaceful, more still, then that is useful. So these are, and I always liked what Ayakema said, these are just techniques, you know. Techniques in themselves are not the important thing. It's the way we apply them, and it's the attitudes that we bring to it that's most important, actually. But this is, you know, something that people debate about quite a bit. And I say, you know, if it's working for you, whatever approach you have to that, good. That's it. That's fine. So, yeah. I don't know if that answered your question, but anyway. Are there any other questions or comments people would like to make? Yes. That's very good.
Thanks, Venerable. I just wanted to ask about the attitude towards defilement as they arise in meditation.
Oh, right, yes.
Just the right attitude that helps to loosen them or to make them not recur as readily, or just to, you know, just to deal with them.
That's a very good question, actually. Very helpful. What are the attitudes that are useful for dealing with defilements when they arise in meditation, and indeed when they arise in life? Actually, it's quite important. When they arise in meditation, the most productive attitude, of course, is not to try and beat them up, not to start a war within ourselves. Because we only have one mind, so if we start to introduce negativity, force, trying to get rid of things, this is immediately a sort of a knot in the mind. The mind can't be peaceful. We only have this one mind. So the best approach is to have an attitude come from wisdom too, to have an attitude of acceptance and kindness, softening around it, you know, just allowing space is actually very useful. One of the techniques I use for reducing thinking is particularly to imagine the mind like a panorama. When it's very open, then thinking, then the defilements, they lose their overwhelming quality. They become reduced. They're like just part of the landscape. Instead of when we're experiencing them, they're often like the whole of our picture. So if we open the mind, I often do that when I begin the meditation early on, just to open the mind so it's very wide. Because the nature of thinking, I think most people notice this, when thought arrives, it's like a grabbing in the mind. It grabs at it. But when the mind is open, there's less tendency to grab at these thoughts, less tendency for the mind to focus so much on those thoughts, just to open it, just allow the breath to be in this vast horizon, a vast panorama. So they're the sorts of approaches I find useful. So any approach that is, you know, has kindness in it, that is wholesome, you know, can deal with defilements quite effectively. But if we try to use force, we're just buying into chasing our tail, you know, it won't lead us anywhere, it won't lead us to peace. You know, we can't beat ourselves up, can't beat the mind up. So thank you for that question. All right, I better answer these. There's one from, I didn't realize we were live streaming actually, Ellen from the USA. Is it possible with meditation to change a mind that seems to tend to negativity and discouragement to becoming a jewel in a last way, must be lasting way, that is really being able to change the overall tone? Conscious effort to do so does not seem to work. Right, right. That does point to a very important factor, experience many of us have, isn't it? That we can consciously want to make changes in our lives and yet don't seem to be able to do it. Why is that? Why is that? I often reflect on that myself. And what I come to is that there are levels of the mind. We have a very conscious level of the mind that we are well acquainted with. But we have a deeper level of mind, which is actually where a lot of the things, a lot of the driving forces in our lives are coming from. And this is a level of mind that, of course, hypnotism and taps into, meditation taps into. So this is the sort of, this is the level of the mind that we need to access. I call it, it's a bit like in computers where they have the, what do they call it? They call it like the, it's where all the settings are, where all the controls are, going to the heart of the mind, as it were. And this is where meditation is very useful, because we're getting very still, very peaceful. And we're getting down to that level of the mind. And yes, I think Alan from the USA, it is possible to change the negativity and discouragement of the mind into a jewel. If it were not possible, the Buddha would not teach it. There's a nice sutta where the Buddha says that. He says, you know, if it were not possible to abandon, to give up, let go of the unwholesome, I would not encourage you, instruct you to give up, to abandon the unwholesome. If it were not possible to develop the wholesome, I would not encourage you to develop the wholesome if it were not possible. So, but he says, because it is possible, I do say this, you know, to develop the wholesome. So it is possible, Alan from the USA, to do that. And what will do that is getting very peaceful, getting very still, getting very deep, and also developing insight, developing wisdom from those experiences. Because when we get peaceful, when we get still, we can see things from a different angle. We can see things in more depth than we usually see. And this is the whole purpose of meditation, really, is to purify the mind. And I always liked, Ayakema used to say, one moment of, I should say, concentration is one moment of purification. But it's true, when the mind is really peaceful and still, the unwholesome qualities are really, really reduced. They're not manifesting. So this is part of the purpose of meditation, is to purify the mind and to purify it of all these negative emotions that we have, and particularly to develop wisdom. So I hope that sort of answered your question, Alan from the USA. And now Upal from Sri Lanka. Hello. I'm coming back soon. How to overcome chronic obsessive thoughts, anxiety, which pop up sometime during deep meditation. And what is the reason for clinging to obsessive thoughts? How to overcome chronic obsessive thoughts, anxiety, which pop up during the meditation. Well, one of the important teachings of the Buddha, of course, he gave a wonderful teaching in the Majjhima Nikaya on the calming of thought, of distracting thoughts, removal, they say, distracting thoughts. And one of the important methods for dealing with or overcoming these chronic obsessive thoughts is to substitute something that's more wholesome, to bring into the mind something that changes the current of the mind, which is going over and over again with something, a particular line of thought. The Buddha said in that it's usually connected with lust, hatred or delusion. So he said, suggested in that we replace, we substitute that state of mind for something more wholesome. And often, you know, people will say you can develop metta, loving kindness meditation to overcome anger and so on. Or you can develop reflecting on the unattractive qualities of the body or whatever to overcome lust. And so these are useful methods, but anything we can bring to mind that is more wholesome, that can replace the obsessive thinking, chronic obsessive thinking, is useful. And that sutta actually talks about five methods, but also a very important aspect of that is wisdom too. We see the disadvantages of this sort of chronic obsessive thought, you know, particularly if it's unwholesome, you know. And the Buddha said, when we see it like that, it's like a person who sees a young person who is fond of their appearance, fond of their clothing and adornments, and said, then they see that they've got a dead dog around their neck, or a dead human being, or a dead snake. He said they would be horrified, humiliated, and disgusted. So he said, you know, when we see these thoughts like that, then it's much easier to abandon them. So we can use methods like that, Upal, from Sri Lanka. Yes, interesting, yes. And what is the reason for clinging obsessive thoughts? Well, I think that's the essence of it, is that we are interested in them, we're concerned with them, so that's why they keep reoccurring, that's why they're chronic, why they keep coming back. And we are strengthening them by repeating them again and again, and that's very noticeable with obsessive thought. It just keeps coming, and it seems to be by itself. But we are buying into it too. We are giving it energy, so that, as I say, if we can change the subject, or as I recently called it, do channel hopping, and move to a different channel, you know, have a more wholesome focus for the thinking, some more wholesome perception, that can help with this chronic obsessive thoughts. And if it is anxiety that's coming up, of course, you know, what is the best meditation object for anxiety? For fear? For anger, ill will? It's metta. That kindness, you know, and that kindness particularly, particularly to yourself, Upal, you know, just to fill yourself with that kindness and care and friendliness, you know, openness. Because if we do this, the mind hasn't got space for anxiety, hasn't got space for fear. We have security. This is the idea of metta. We feel secure, we feel safe, and we feel comfortable with ourselves. So this is very important in this case, I think, Upal, if you can develop metta, or we call it loving kindness, or in Sri Lanka they say Maitri Bhavana, some would be very helpful in that case. So I hope that has answered the question for Upal in Sri Lanka. I wish you well. So are there any other questions before we finish off? Just maybe. Ah, very good. So I hope that one of the benefits of this meditation for me, and I hope it was for you too, is when you visualize light, you get a lot more energy. It's the antidote, actually, to dullness and drowsiness. And I find that I get that a lot of energy with it. And for our meditation, anything that can bring up wholesome perceptions, You know, for instance, the Buddha taught, if we recollect the qualities of the Buddha, the Dhamma, his teachings, so recollect the Sangha, those that have realized his teachings, if we recollect our goodness, this is called Sila, recollect our generosity, and recollect the qualities that made, allowed beings to become devas. If we do this, it brings brightness to the mind, it brings gladness, and from gladness, the Buddha said we develop rapture. From rapture, the body and the mind become very peaceful, tranquil, pasadhi. And this is where people lose perceptions of the body. Then there can be happiness. Then the mind comes together. And then it's samadhi, we call it. This is perfect stillness. So we can use anything that can develop this gladness, any approach. And this is one approach that may work for some of you. It does for me. I like. So I encourage people to be creative and see what works for you. This is the important criteria. What works is taking you towards peace, stillness, wisdom, happiness. Then you're on the right path. So I think we can finish there and just pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha.
Svākato bhagavata namo dhammanasāmi Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho saṅkhaṁ namāmi.